Hi there, and welcome to Healing at Last, the podcast. Healing at Last is the roadmap to uncovering what happened inside you as a result of the pain of your past. How to find it, how to heal it, and how to move beyond it. So let's get started.
All right. Okay. So welcome. What day of the week is it? Is anybody caught up with what day of the week it is? Is anybody caught up with what time of the year it is? Does anybody know whether they're still alive or not? Because I'm just about getting caught up with life, I tell you. So I think it is a Wednesday evening. I couldn't tell you the date. I know that it's 7:30 because I'm looking at a clock, and that's about all that I know. We're going to have about an hour together on a very, very, very important topic for me. This is what is chapter 7 in the book, and it's the kind of the pivotal part of healing trauma. So this is what we call secondary pain, and it is, if we're talking about, and most of us are here either in a professional capacity, and anybody that's watching on Facebook is here from a personal capacity, but for most of us, the search as freedom from the past, freedom from the pain within. Is that fair enough? For most of us, that is the Holy Grail. For most of us, that is what we're searching for. We're searching for the removal of the pain that we're carrying, the mental and emotional, the freedom from the past, the freedom from trauma, the transformation of trauma. My understanding, my personal journey with the transformation of trauma is that unless we access what happened within, unless we actually access what happened within us, not what happened to us, that's an important piece, but not nearly as important as what happened within. Within in relation to what happened to, the two of them go hand in hand. But unless we're able to access that and understand that and heal that, and I see some very familiar faces here that have taken that journey. I'm looking straight at you, Michael. The differentiation between what happened to me and what happened within me is the difference between transforming trauma and managing trauma. And the details of what happened within, the specificity of what happened within, the patterns that emerged as a result of what happened within is often what we're living with as adults. So we talk about trauma as an overt trauma and covert trauma, big T trauma, small T trauma. It's all the same stuff. So we start this session today understanding that if we're to heal from the traumas that we have faced from the past, then we must heal the narrative within. So we have to find that narrative within. We have to find the details of what happened. And therein lies that one of the biggest hurdles that as human beings we have. We have this huge hurdle that we have to deal with, and it's called secondary pain. And secondary pain is fundamentally a product of the original trauma. And it's not the pain, it's not the trauma itself. So just stay with me a wee tiny second, right? I'm going to break this down and explain it completely. So for what I can see is that, you mean, you have to see our inbox in January and our inbox in September is particularly flooded with requests for help or requests for other therapeutics, for our therapeutic services, not just me, but the team that we have that are training with. And the reason for that influx is because at this time of year, it's difficult. At this time of year, we're promising ourselves that we'll find and heal the pain of the past. But the reality of it out there is that what we're fundamentally treating is secondary pain. Not 100%, but I'd say a good 70% of the work that's been done has been done on secondary pain. That causes a massive problem. and it causes a massive problem for the person who's in pain. And you can all relate to this. Anybody watching this can relate to this and use the chat for me. Whenever you have pain and you identify that pain in your mind, then you come up with a remedy for that pain, that difficulty, that emotional difficulty, whatever it is. And then what happens is that you'll seek help for what you've identified. And what you're often seeking help for is what I call secondary pain. You try to treat secondary pain, and that what's going to happen is the original pain is going to shapeshift. It's going to show up in another way, in another place, in another face, in another space. It's going to show up in another unique way that you didn't have your eye on before. And that's the epidemic I think we're facing in the mental health field. What's happening is that we are chasing products of the primary pain and we are not getting to the root cause. So tonight, what I want to do is speak to that problem openly and honestly and say that unless we understand the difference in our hurt selves, not just from a therapeutic point of view, but in our honest to God, vulnerable, hurt human being selves, us, me, you. If we understand the difference between primary and secondary, then we stand a fighting chance to find and heal that primary pain as opposed to chasing ghosts, as opposed to chasing products. So tonight I want to let you look very clearly at the differentiation between primary and secondary and hierarchy of pain. And I want you to be able to see and ask yourself, what am I chasing? What am I trying to heal? If you're a therapist, if you're a clearing specialist, then clearing specialists know how to do this inside out, upside down, inside out. But if you're a therapist at this stage, what I want you to understand is, and ask yourself that honest question, am I helping people treat and manage secondary pain, or am I helping people with primary pain? Because the treatment of primary pain is where we will all win. It's what transforms trauma. It's what sets you free. It's what sets you free from the pain of the past so you don't have to keep regurgitating the same pattern of hurt, so that you don't have to keep regurgitating the same principles of the hurt self that are active in us. How does that sound, Ease? Am I making sense? Now I'm going to explain it and break it down, but is it having a chord with you? Just from the wee faces that I can see. And I know some of these here have done the mighty work of turning towards the primary pain, and you'll have more insight than others. So feel free to share that on the chat as you go, because I can see some clients here, which are brilliant, clients of the Clear Method, which is brilliant. So let's begin. So how does secondary pain start? And if we understand how secondary pain starts or how it becomes an issue for us, or how birth, then we can tend to have a wee tiny bit of compassion for ourselves. But in all of my understanding of myself, in all of the research, in all of the hours of clinical practice up to now, what was quite evident, more importantly, what was evident for me through this witness conscious function that I have, is that we tend to, whenever we're in pain, whenever we're in any pain, so let's assume that's the primary pain, our minds are brilliant at sourcing solutions, remedies. They predict that this feeling needs soothed, and they try to go and source a solution to the pain. Now, if we don't have what I call psychosomatic unity, mind and body unity, this is all unconscious. You're not doing this consciously. So what you're doing is you're seeking a solution to the pain unconsciously. And these solutions in the main are good solutions at the beginning. You have got this pain. I'll give you a classic example of it. You've got this pain and you seek a solution. So that solution then over time played again and again and again, repeated again and again and again, becomes a problem. Now I'll show it to you now in a graphic form, and I'll give it to you in an example. That problem that solution to that problem becomes a problem in of itself. Alcohol is a classic example, but alcohol is too obvious, right? Alcohol is a classic secondary problem pain. There is pain within. We use alcohol to move and soothe the pain. Alcohol becomes the secondary pain. We treat the alcohol. We have to treat what caused the alcohol itself. That's a classic, classic example. The problem is secondary pain isn't that obvious. So let's look at another example of secondary pain that's less obvious. And why is it important for it to be obvious? Because if I have a problem with alcohol and I go to someone to try and fix the alcohol, then we fix the alcohol. And most of us know that people drink for a reason. We know that alcohol is an emotional problem. I mean, that's not news to anybody. So normally what happens is you'll undergo treatment for the alcohol and then you'll probably have to do some emotional trauma work for why. If it's not obvious, if secondary pain isn't obvious, then what we're presenting as the problem to our therapists becomes the focus. And we don't understand that there's something else actually driving that primary, that secondary pain. So let's look at an example that's not as obvious. The fear of rejection that was born in childhood, where there was rejection, where there was deep hurt, where there was deep shame, where there was deep embarrassment, where there was an absolute wounding of self, an annihilation of self, and an inability to cope with that rejection. It's irrelevant who it came from, why it came from. But that was the core experience. It's locked away, forgotten about. Even if it was a playground thing, it doesn't matter. The emotional content is the same. So we then have this place or this as we get older, we forget about that. It isn't available to us consciously. But what we have done is, we have, in our mind's functions, made a solution to protecting ourselves from the rejection. These solutions can be many, many, many solutions to protect the rejection. But say, for example, one of these solutions is to stay away from meaningful connection, to stay away from deep, meaningful connection in order to protect yourself, to leave before you're left, to annihilate before you're annihilated. And say your essence, the essence of your being, everyone needs connection, but say that your condition, your human needs are really strongly connected to connection, and you need connection. And connection is your lifeblood. And it lights you up. It makes you feel alive in this world. It makes all things possible. You're now running against your solution to the pain of rejection is now running against your essence. That is going to be a major problem. What was a solution is now going to be a major problem. And from that, we get depression. Easy to understand why you would get depression from that. You get anxiety. You have trust issues. You have lethargy. You have no direction. You're hopeless. You're drinking. You present those things as your problem. And what would be the solutions to those problems? Building your trust. Building up your self-belief that you're good enough to be in relationship. Building new habits. Now, already, because I've explained the primary pain, already we now see how they are only secondary problems. We fix those, what happens? If you don't fix the underlying issue, you're going to be back in the same place a year later. How many of these of that has happened to you? Not even a year later, 6 months later. All your focus is going to be on fixing this secondary pain. All of your hours spent in therapeutic connection is going to be fixing that secondary pain. Because it is a real problem. It's not that it's not a problem. It's not that depression isn't a problem. It's not that anxiety isn't a problem. It's not that this stuff is not a problem. It absolutely is. It absolutely is. But when it has been driven by primary pain and we miss it, then we put ourselves in this hope, hurt, despair cycle. The hope that I have identified the problem, as the mind identifies problems. It is my depression. It is my anxiety. It is my lack of trust. It is my, the hope that you're going to get rid of this hurt. And then the despair that it moves it about, but doesn't move the dial. And that, I think, is what is the epidemic that we're facing. That's why Clear Method is primary pain focused. And it's not to say that secondary pain isn't a problem or needs ignored or dismissed or not valued or not understood. But it's understood in the context that it is a product of something. And I have seen some amazing, amazing transformations of secondary pain by themselves whenever we focused on the primary pain. Now, there's lots, and that's just a very classic example. That pain of rejection is a classic example. There's lots and lots of other examples. But that's this problem of secondary pain. So the question, as you're listening to me now, is, do you think you're dealing with primary pain? Put it in the chat for me if, or do you think that you've been dealing with primary pain, or do you think that you've been chasing secondary pain? So it would be really helpful for everybody else watching here, because when we're honest enough about ourselves, then we don't feel so alone in the chasing of primary pain or secondary pain. Now, Michael Mooney, you're not allowed to cheat. You're not allowed to cheat. You're not allowed to cheat. Neither are you, Helen Crossland. Secondary, both. Brilliant. Yeah. Been trying to touch and access the primary pain. Brilliant. Even now at this stage, if you have identified that you are tracking, what I call tracking and tracing primary pain, that is a turn towards primary pain. Just that question, just that description. Yeah, just that description. Now, sometimes secondary pain needs sorted because you can't access primary pain if secondary pain is blocking you. What kind of secondary pain would block primary pain? In order to access the woundedness within, we need, as I alluded to, psychosomatic unity. So we need our minds and our bodies in one place. We need them connected. We need a thing called metacognition, which is just being able to hear ourselves, just being able to listen to what's going on in ourselves. We need self-awareness. This is the two things that create self-awareness. So we need a level of self-awareness. If secondary pain blocks you from being able to be in that awareness, alcohol use, drug use, any prescription medication dependency, if it blocks, then you're going to need to deal with secondary pain first. If it doesn't block and you can get access to primary pain, then you're now working out what I call the hierarchy of pain. Does that make sense? You're now working out what is the, yeah. All right, Denise, I'll come to that now. Yeah. Yes, Shane, some people are unsure. That is our job. That is our job, is to work out the primary and secondary. And a lot of the time, the truth of it is that you're feeling around in the dark. You're feeling around and wondering. And one of the big things that is important is that you're constantly asking, is there something driving this? Is there something driving this secondary pain? It's a really key question. Is there something underlying it? Is there something connected to it? Yeah. So what we have here is we have a differentiation between what is primary pain and what is secondary pain. And somebody wrote there brilliantly, I understand what you're saying, but I can't find my primary pain. I don't understand where that primary pain is. And it's really, really, really important that we differentiate. So I'll explain what primary pain is. Now, I'm being very careful here too, okay? I'm being very careful about the environment that we're in. I'm explaining concepts and allowing you to gently ask yourself your own questions so that it is safe. You know, if this is too much for you, you can walk away from this video. If this is triggering in any way or difficult in any way, that you can walk away from this video. So I'm being very careful. I'm giving examples and I'm giving concepts to which you can apply to yourself. You can watch the replay of this if you wanted to tease some of your stuff out. You can take this to your own therapist. And if you are a therapist, you can ask yourself your own questions. Now, somebody mentioned primary pain and safety. Brilliant. So someone mentioned trust, and I think that's a really important part of the puzzle. For me, there's a lot of preparation work needed before primary pain can be excavated. There's about three stages of preparation work that is needed. And that is what builds trust in the client's sense of self. They allow access. They allow access to the primary pain. So we just don't walk up to primary pain and say hello. It doesn't give itself over like that. It doesn't say, hello, I am, you know. That's not the way this works. But what we're understanding, and most of you understand this anyway, emotional psychosomatic unity creates trust. There's a thing called wrapping. We don't have the time for it. We might do that another night. Anybody on the Emotional Master Course will know that. That there's this thing called wrapping that takes place that blocks us away from the pain within. And sometimes that is what locks us out of primary pain and keeps us in secondary pain. And that's a really, really, really important feature of finding primary pain, which was somebody's question. For some people, it's not safe enough to find the primary pain. It's safer to stay in secondary pain. For some people, it's too big, it's too much to touch without all the preparation. But just let me explain the preparation that is required for primary pain and then explain primary pain. The preparation that is required is, as I've said a few times, is what we call emotional mastery, psychosomatic unity, mind-body connection, an ability to self-regulate. The truth of it is most of us were brought up in homes and in cultures where regulation, emotional regulation was absent. So we don't have the capacity to self-regulate. It's not a skill we've ever learned. It's not something we've ever known. So that skill has to be built up, because for the most part, people, once they've accessed the primary pain, they'll be working with that primary pain, not just in the room, but outside the room. So it becomes really important. The third thing, and most important thing, as I alluded to, is a thing called wrapping. There's a lot of nervous system activation around some emotion, and that all has to be stripped away. Now, if you do that, what happens is that you're closer to the primary pain. So let's talk about the primary pain, right? It's hard to get to. It's hard to access. That doesn't make you abnormal. It doesn't make you weak. It doesn't make you anything but human. It's not easy. It lies in the recesses of your mind. It lies in the bowels of your body. Quite literally, the bowels of your body. It lurks. It's menacing. It's difficult. It doesn't want to be heard. It wants to shadow itself. It wants to show you secondary pain all day to keep itself safe. So the access of primary pain is not a walk in the park, as we now understand. But when we set it up right, then we can access it. Let's talk about primary pain, and then we'll go back to show how primary pain becomes secondary pain visually. So primary pain is the pain of the original wound. It is so unique. It is so unique to each and every single one of us. It has its own unique imprint. It has its own unique language. It has its own unique meanings. Somatic patterning. It has its own unique levels of nervous system activation. It has its own defense systems. It has its own way that it moves through your body. It has its own way that it directs and dictates your behaviors that come from it. it is a what we call like a protein spike. Has anybody ever seen in a clear method? We talk about the core wound being like a protein spike. It's like a circle. We like, you know, that when they were doing, when we were all learning about COVID and how COVID gets under your system and how the wee protein spikes latch onto each other. That's what a core wound looks like for me. And yes, she can have more than one piece of primary pain, of course. So primary pain have all of these components. They're like a wee protein ball, wee protein spike, wee lots of arms. And every piece of that puzzle is unique. But here's the thing about primary pain. It's repetitive. It's repetitive. It will be familiar to you. And it will, if you're conscious, if you're in any consciousness about your body, it'll be a same feeling in your body. If you have any psychosomatic unity, it'll be the repeated feeling. If anybody here has ever worked with primary pain, just put it under the chat. And you know it from its intensity. Primary pain is intense. It is not a walk in the park. It is a gut-wrenching experience, as if you were right back in those moments where it was first birthed, like time has never passed. Like you could be 50 years away from that original pain and you're back on it. Somatic pain, Paul, is part of it, but not all of it. Part of it, but not all of it. It is that protein spike. It's that ball with all of these component parts. And that primary pain can direct and dictate your life. It can cause trauma choices. It can cause all sorts of behaviors. And more importantly, the mind will always look for a solution to it, because that's the way we're built. It'll always look for a solution to it, unconsciously look for a solution to it. That solution, over time, repeat it and 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 repeat it, can cause a load of secondary problems. Everybody with me? So I want to share this screen with you, and this will explain. My voice is gone for some reason. Probably can't even believe I'm doing a workshop in January. Let me see. Can you see that? Can everybody see that? Give me a thumbs up if you can see it. Yeah. So I'll explain what we're looking at. We're looking at the hierarchy of pain. So in this, we see primary pain is nothingness, lifelessness, and no point. The solution to that primary pain is quite an adaptive solution. In the great scheme of things, career success that soothes the nothingness or lifelessness, positive thoughts that takes away the nothingness or lifelessness, seems sensible. Striving for greatness covers the nothingness. Very adaptive pattern, isn't it? It's quite healthy. It would actually in society be rewarded. It will be seen as healthy. It will be seen. So none of this would be seen as a problem. It's all seen as healthy, adaptive patterns. Whenever this stuff is continuous, never ending, because this stuff can never fill that, ever fill that. You can never fill primary pain with the solution that the mind gives, because primary pain is not healed like that. It's healed as it was born. So this stuff, brilliant stuff, can heal it momentarily. It can take it away somatically in the moment. For a day, for a day or two. But it can never, ever actually undo. So what do we do when that doesn't meet that? When that doesn't heal that? We drive harder. We do more of what we know works, more of the solution. And Helen, this is your burnout. This is classic burnout stuff. Now, so Helen's works with people who have who have been in burnout. This is classic burnout stuff now. So exhaustion, stuckness, anxiety, imposter syndrome, I can't seem, no matter how much growth and development, it doesn't make any difference. I still feel the nothingness. I'm an imposter. Then we go and try and heal imposter syndrome. You go and heal imposter syndrome without healing worthiness, you're going to get imposter syndrome again. You go and heal exhaustion and rest for 6 months, but you need that nothingness filled, you're going to be back in that cycle again. You want more. This career isn't enough. You need more. You're feeling stuck. Now you're starting to layer problems. These are what we present in therapy as our problems. These are what we chase as solutions. If I could just have an answer to the exhaustion, if I could just have an answer to the procrastination, because I'm striving so hard, I'm so exhausted that I just shut down, my body just shuts down, but I need to get back up, but now I'm burnt, and now I don't know where I'm going. I'm filled with anxiety, and I can't do, and imposter syndrome, but I'm going to keep trying the wheel on the inside. And nowhere are we looking at this nothingness that is driving all of this. This is a visual representation of one of the easiest forms of primary and secondary pain. And I think, honestly, I think the more we pay attention to the primary pain and prepare for the excavation and the seeing of primary pain, then the more chance we have of actually helping people transform the trauma of the past. Is it easy to come in here? Absolutely not. Is it a walk in the park? Absolutely not. But I can tell you this. This is my very early secondary pain model. This is mine. Do you have any questions whatsoever? Shout, because I can answer the questions personally. Because this was mine. I had a nothingness inside me that was so dark and so awful and so depressing. And so fruitless and so made of nothing. I was sure that this life had no point and nothing to give. I was petrified of it. And so I did all of this daily from I was about, God, about 15. Sought out degrees, sought out big houses, sought out to be the opposite of what I had came from. I wanted, didn't want anywhere near it, because that was my solution to driving away from the nothingness. I couldn't see what it was doing. And that was the cycle that I got myself into. Exhausted, anxious. And the anxiety came from the constant, this never being enough, me feeling like I was never going to get away from this, that this could be here in a moment. This nothingness could be here in a moment. If I didn't create great success, if I didn't create great development, if I didn't keep striving for greatness, if I didn't keep up, with a big house, then I was going to return to nothingness. And it was exhausting. It's like a hamster wheel, Fiona. It is. It absolutely is. Yeah. Yeah. So this is a really brilliant way of showing your clients. Well, once you show yourself and your clients that this is how it works, then you can start to identify and prep and prepare for the primary pain. But there's one thing that I want to run through. Anybody, any questions about that? Was that a helpful visual aid there? Who's a visual learner? Some of us are visual learners, I know. I'm trying to give practical examples, and I'm trying to give visual examples so that we get it. Because I think the more that we get it, the more that we'll help people and the more we'll help ourselves. So if we look at that model again, right? If we go back to that model, this is what I call now, there's a problem with secondary pain. And the problem with secondary pain is not only the primary pain is not easy to get to, which is one problem, right? But the problem with secondary pain is that we get a thing called the layer effect of secondary pain. Yeah? So this secondary, the problem with secondary, the layer and effect of secondary pain is this. If you have primary pain, like I've just shown you, nothingness, you know, like an emptiness, and you're striving on the outside, all of that good stuff, everything that they talk about in TikToks, you know, everything that they tell you to do, get up early in the morning, one in the morning, all that rubbish, right? So if you're connected to that and you keep going and keep going and keep going, and then you end up in burnout and you present yourself for help. And what happens is you then work in burnout, for example, or you work on the anxiety, for example, or you work on giving yourself rest and teaching yourself new habits. And because this is what we do, we provide solutions to the secondary pain, right? When that fails, because it does fail, because it can't work. Now we see why it can't work. When that fails, when your new solution fails, who do you blame? Because you don't blame the therapist. They're the last people that get the blame. Who do you blame? You. Who do you shame? You. Who do you call weak? You. Who do you call useless? You. Give us some other names, because I can tell you I've heard them all. Useless, broken. What happens if your core wound is worthless or stupid or not enough? Do you see how it feeds back into itself? Now you're a failure. Now you're stupid. Look at that. Look at the chat, guys. This is the layer and effect of dealing with secondary pain. This is why it's a bloody epidemic, because it's a parasite. It's a bloody parasite that keeps itself a bloody life. You're a joke. You're laughable to others. Yeah. And then what happens if you are a therapist? Now you're a fraud. Now you shouldn't even be doing the job you're doing. Now, who has stuck that knife in? Who has gone for that sucker punch? Yeah. And this becomes, yes, absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, it is the layer and effect of secondary pain. This is why I'm absolutely passionate about it. This is why the CLEAR method exists. This is why we are primary pain root cause focused, because we will trap ourselves. Yes, you're no good at it. You can't do it. I'm a failure. Look at that. Look. It is the human condition. You blame yourself. You turn towards yourself and blame yourself. And all the time, all that you've been doing is trying to fix. It's like I say in the book, I say, if you went to, right? Now I'm at danger now of spilling over and the evangelical preaching. So if I go on that, go that direction, stop me, right? If you walked on the A&E, right, and you said in A&E, look, I have broke my arm, and you're in agony, and somebody gave you pain relief for your ears, would you accept it? Would you walk out of there and be hopeful that your arm would be fixed? No. Your instinct would be to know that this isn't right. This isn't going to help me. And you might go back and fight the corner. Now, I know it's ridiculous. I know if you went to A&E, you're not like, well, I don't know, but you're not likely to get pain relief for your ear if your arm's broken. But just say, for example, that was the case. You wouldn't accept it. You'd fight tooth and nail. You'd go back and say, that's not going to treat that. But yet we are so blinded by secondary pain, we don't know that. So we don't know how to fight for ourselves. As clients, as people who are in pain, we don't know how to fight. We don't know how to stand up for ourselves and say, that's not what's going on in me. There's something else. Can we look at that something else? I implore ye the day. If you know that there's something other than the things that you're presenting, ask for help with. Point your therapist, point who your helper is towards it, and be relentless with it. because it'll save you years of that hurt, hope, despair cycle. Don't accept pain relief for your ear when your bloody arm's falling off, when your leg's falling off, because that's the analogy. That's what we're doing with primary and secondary pain, and it's not fair. And the only people we blame is ourselves. Yeah, the only people that we turn in on is ourselves. So I'm going to read you a few statements. If you've been turning in on yourself and hurting yourself, I'm going to take a pause, I'm going to answer a question, and then I'm going to ask you to think about what I have been saying to you and maybe try and see if you can shift some of this blame, some of this shame. Because if I can shift some of this blame or shame on you tonight, we're one step closer to turning to the primary pain. One step closer to asking for help. One step closer to saying, I'm not doing this to myself anymore. Everybody all right with that? So the blame game. Caroline is asking, what about the blame game where a client is on a loop of blaming everyone else? If your client is on a loop of blaming everyone else, and let's talk about this in real terms. Stop talking about therapists and clients as if we're not clients ourselves. If we are blaming other people, then we're stuck in a stage of process. We're stuck at a very early stage of process where we have no unity. We don't understand our own felt sense. We don't understand our own inner world. We don't understand the thoughts that we're having. We don't understand the impact our inner world is having. And we're locked out of our own self, and it's easier to blame someone else. So that's a difference from, that's very difference. Very, very different from the blame that I'm talking about, because you can't heal, because you can't get meek, because you are chasing ghosts. You're chasing something that you think is the problem and it keeps shape shifting. You blame yourself for that. That's a different type of blame. Is that all right? Is that okay? Did I explain that well enough? Is that all right, Colm? Was that okay, Sylvia? Yeah. Okay. So let me read this, Steve. It's one I prepared earlier. I'm not under here. Leona, how are we doing for time? Are we all right? All right. I'm not at risk of, okay.
No, you're 20 past eight. You're fine.
All right. Okay. All right. We'll go now for another 10 minutes, and then we'll, how's everybody on Facebook? Everybody all right? Sometimes I see that, Leona, sometimes the fear stops them. Yeah. I see that. I'll talk to that now in a wee minute. Okay. So, let me see where we are. Okay. So in relation to blaming yourself for secondary pain or not being able to find your primary pain or not being able to get there or not being able to heal, the first thing that I want is all to understand, and I've said this, I alluded to this earlier, is as human beings, we are all designed, every one of us. That's why I said, let's not talk about therapists versus clients, because we're all clients. You might have the role of therapist, but you're still a client. You're still a human being, walking, feeling, talking, somatic, emotional human being that's hurt and wounded. That's just life. So as human beings, we're all driven. It is in the fabric of our being. We are all driven to avoid pain. It is the old Freudian principle of pain versus pleasure. We are all hardwired to find ease. You're hardwired. So you don't blame yourself for bleeding because you're hardwired to bleed. Right? You're hardwired to bleed. You're a human being. You're hardwired to bleed. You're hardwired to find a solution to the pain, even if it's not conscious. You're still hardwired to do it. So at some level, you will have chosen some sort of something, some behavior, some thought, some way of being. You'll have chosen something that takes away that pain because you're hardwired, not because you're weak, not because you can't do, not because you're stupid, not because you're not strong enough, not because of any other reason other than, like you bleed, you're hardwired to find a solution to the pain. You will have found a solution to that pain. You will not have understood that it was a solution to the pain. Is everybody happy enough? Primary pain is mostly unconscious, as too is the methods to move and soothe. So you're doing stuff in the dark. If you're doing stuff in the dark, you can't blame yourself for banging into things. You just can't blame yourself for banging into things. You can't blame yourself for being in the dark. Yes. Yes, karma. You run away from the pain at all costs. Anything to go there. That's how you're hardwired for it. You're not weak for it. You're hardwired. So your choice of secondary pain or your choice of solution that creates secondary pain is a hardwired problem. It's not a personality problem. It's a human condition problem. It's in every one of us. We all do it. Every one of us will do it. You're not weak or broken. You've simply been trying to manage a pain that you're in. You cannot blame yourself for the way you handle the solutions. And the way that you handle your pain is in direct relation to the level of pain. I'm going to say that again, right? The way or the methods that you've chosen is in direct correlation with the level of pain. So if you've wrecked the house, if you get angry, if you lose control, that has been your way of managing. That has been the expression of that pain. And you're blaming yourself, hurting yourself. But what we're understanding is that is directly linked to the level of primary pain that you've got in. And when we understand the levels of primary pain, we understand the level of behavior, thoughts, feelings required to soothe it. And we start to have a wee bit more compassion for ourselves. What I'm saying is secondary pain is inevitable. It's an inevitable part of the human experience. It's inevitable. It can't not be. The pain that comes from the solutions that our mind makes is inevitable. It's an inevitable part of being human. It's not a personality problem. It's because of the way the mind works, because of the way the actualizing tendency works, because of the way these principles that were set hardwired to survive works. So, you know, I could go on and read and read and read, but I'm not going to. I'm just hoping that some of these reflections help you shift that shame and blame. It helps you see your human. Yes, it's just a coping mechanism. Secondary pain is just a coping mechanism that has got out of hand, that is now no longer a solution, that is now a problem. That's all. And so we understand there then that we might have a new narrative around how we see ourselves for chasing the secondary pain, for believing the secondary pain, for being connected, for having it, for trying to think that that was the solution. And we see differently today. We see differently tonight. That's why I'm doing this. This is normally only, this is part of our clear method training. Now, if some of the other training I might speak to it, I don't know if I've ever spoken to it in APP. Have I, Sarah? Did I ever speak about secondary pain, Sarah Barker, in APP? No? Have I? Wee bit. So if you're on the train, a wee tiny bit, Max, if you're on the training programs, we talk about it, but I thought it was really, 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 really important to talk about it in our main page so that we get this kind of real open conversation about it. So that it's not kept for people who are just training, because it's something that affects us all, therapists or not. And it's a thing that I think and it's also part of the book. And I wanted just to be as honest and open and get the message out there that we're dealing with secondary pain and we're causing hurt and pain to ourselves when we're dealing with secondary pain, and we're blaming and shaming ourselves. We're keeping ourselves trapped in it, and it's no good. There's another phenomenon that I want you to be careful of, and I want you to watch, and this is the last piece of the puzzle. I want you to be honest, if you can, about this next piece. So that what I call the layering effect of secondary pain, self-explanatory. We have secondary pain and then we're blaming and shaming ourselves because we can't shift it and we don't know how to get rid of it and we keep looping, and that's layering. So it's this effect. And there's another phenomenon that happens with secondary pain, and it's called the looping effect. So I want you to watch for this in yourselves. And I'm going to give you two very clear examples. I'm going to pull the document back up and give you a visual example again. But let's say, for example, the primary pain was worthlessness. The solution to the worthlessness was perfection. Everybody with me? So the solution that the mind made is that all right, Sylvia? Got that? Aye? Happy enough? Okay. So the solution that the mind made to the worthlessness was perfection. Ideal. If I just be perfect, if I just deliver, if I'm just perfect, then I can cover the worthlessness. So perfection is the name of the game. Good enoughness is the name of the game. And we seek then perfection. Everybody with me? Everybody all right? Yeah. Just be a good gear. Just be perfect. Don't do anything wrong. Stay in that line. Yeah. So if we are constantly in perfection, we're going to have anxiety. It's going to be a secondary problem because there's no way of being perfect. Yeah, there's no way. Yeah, people pleasing as well. Yes, absolutely, Carl. There's no way of pleasing everybody. There's just no way in God's earth. It just can't happen. There's no way of being perfect. There's no way of being good enough. There's just no way. There's always going to be a feedback loop that's going to show you that you're not. So worthlessness is at the heart of the matter. Perfectionism is the solution. And what happens with constant need to please or constant need for perfect or constant, is that it's going to produce anxiety. It can't but not. So now we have the secondary problem of anxiety. Yeah? If anxiety gets too big, and I want you to be very, very careful, watch this really carefully. If anxiety gets very, very big, and you're incapacitated by the anxiety, you're unable to hold down your job, you're unable to be what? Perfect. Because the secondary pain is so great from the solution, you're unable to, yes, secondary pain is this, perfectionism is the solution. Secondary pain is the anxiety. The solution becomes the problem in of itself. Anxiety is the secondary pain that comes from the perfectionism. Perfectionism now is not an adaptive response anymore. It's a maladaptive response. It's creating anxiety. It's creating depression. You can't get out of it. It's overwhelming. You take that to therapy. Everybody with me? You take perfectionism to therapy. You take people pleasing to therapy. That's not the problem. That was the solution to the problem. You take your anxiety to therapy. That's still not the problem. But watch the loop and effect of this. If that gets out of control, anxiety, depression, remember the core issue, worthlessness, then this person, this human being, runs the risk of not being well enough to work, not being well enough to hold up the perfection, not being well enough to hold up their how they see themselves in the world, not being fit enough, and collapsing under the weight of it. What are they creating? They're creating the primary pain. When the solution becomes so problemsome, it creates so much secondary pain that we actually loop back under the pain, the thing that we're trying to avoid, and we create what we're trying to avoid. How many people have done that? How many times has secondary pain created what you're trying to avoid? And this is why secondary pain is, this is why I could look, stand on the street corners roaring, shouting about it. Because look at the effects that it has. It creates, can, not always. So if it hasn't created for you, that's fine, right? But it can create what it's trying to avoid. it will loop in on itself. I'll give you another example. I'll give you one more example. Thrill seeking as a way to keep away the nothingness of life. Yeah. Thrill seeking as a way to move and soothe the nothingness. Perfectly acceptable, reasonable. The thrill seeking gets bigger and bigger and bigger. It's insatiable. They go after more and more and more because the one had the dopamine that takes away that nothingness. It becomes, what's the word? Give me the word, if anybody's got the word. I've lost the word, if anybody wants to give me the word. So the more thrill, they have to seek more thrill to get the same feeling. That's what I'm trying to say. So if anybody's got the word for that, they can put it in the chat for me. So they get more, they take more risk. Yes, Fiona, take more risk to get the same feeling, to take away the nothingness. You start taking more risk. Tolerance is the word Caroline was looking for. They create a tolerance from their feeling of risk. Brilliant. The more they do that, what are they running the risk of doing? Moving away from their normal life, moving away from their relationships, moving away from the things that ground them, the things that matter to them. What will they inevitably create? The same nothingness. They'll look back if they continue on that path. If they're not turned towards the nothingness that's driving the risk-taking behavior, they'll create so much risk that they'll end up in nothingness, practically. Not just emotionally, but actually practically. We're talking, the looping effect tends to create the practical, real-life, tangible results that reinforce the wound. I have nothing. I have no family. I have no job. Therefore, there is nothing. And it creates the time. And the wound, my God, the primary wound feeds off that stuff. That primary wound just is like, see, I told you. And now you have it in your real life. Now it's real and it's in this life. It's not some sort of subconscious primary pain back in childhood. Actually, it's here and it's now and you've got it and it's real and it's true and there's nobody can tell you it's not. And it locks us in the primary pain. It keeps us connected to primary pain. It absolutely reinforces. Joanne, some primary pain typically birthed, and I love the word typically in childhood, absolutely, but can be birthed anywhere, to be honest, at any time. Yeah. So if you can't find a solution, what do you do? Can't find a solution to what shame? The primary wound is from the past, can't be changed. I love that. Anything, any primary wound can be changed. And I suppose that's a lovely way to end this session. And that's the differentiation between what happened to me and what happened inside me as a result. You can't change the situation that created the primary pain. You can't change the details of that. That is there. You can change the intricacies of what it did to you, but you have to know those intricacies. You have to know the detail of that. You have to know the feeling of that. You have to know the understanding of it. You have to know the language of that. You have to know what it told you about yourself or what it told you about yourself and the world around you. Once you get under that, then you can change. And I can tell you can change. Myself, and there's lots of clients that I can see in front of me. There is lots of people that I see in front of me who know the power of what that, once you get under the intricacies. But if you stay on the periphery, you stay in the secondary pain, if you stay on the outside of this, this is not transforming. You're going to stay in that chasing environment, management environment. And for some people, they choose to stay there. That is completely your prerogative. So let's not shame people who don't want to go near the primary pain either. Because that's a big job in itself. all that I'm saying is, I'm not saying that everybody should march towards their primary pain in some sort of kind of, you know, evangelical preaching thing. I'm not. What I'm saying is that it's available if you want to, if you have the right support, if you have the right connect, if you have the right conditions around you, and you get a therapist who knows how to do that with you, and you get help and support, because it's very rare to be able to go towards your primary pain on your own. You need support for that. And some people choose never to go near it. Some people choose to manage. But see, if you're choosing to manage, know that you're choosing to manage, and don't shame yourself for that either. And don't allow that layering effect to happen. Know that you're just managing, and that's all right. And know that if you're managing, you're managing because you're not ready, because it's not time, because it's not safe enough to be with the pain with them. And let yourself off the hook. So I am not in this moment saying everybody should march towards their primary pain. But what I am saying is that primary pain is where the Holy Grail is. It's where if we want to transform trauma, that's where it is. It's in the heart of what happened to us, in that wee protein spike, with all its nuances and all its stories and all its stories, because it's often what happens in trauma is what we believe about ourselves. It's where the worthlessness is born. It's where the uselessness is born. It's where the seeing of the world is born. It's in all of that. And I can tell you from my own, and thank you, Mary, I'm delighted. You're a classic example of transforming trauma. Mary and I did some amazing work, some amazing body-centered work. But I can tell you from my own perspective, you're not, when you heal that piece of primary pain or those pieces of primary pain, because I had more than one piece of primary pain, when you heal those pieces of primary pain, you're no longer stuck in the past. You're no longer trapped in the memory of the then. Because the truth of it is, it's very hard to be in the now when the pain of the then is pulsating through your body. We can talk about being in the now all we want, but it's incredibly hard to be in the now when the pain of the past is pulsating through your body. Because all that you'll want to do is seek a solution. And primary pain gets born and you head for that cycle. So my hope in this 1 hour and 10 minutes session is that I have awakened you to the idea of primary versus secondary, the hierarchy of that pain, because sometimes we have to fix the secondary pain first, but you will know what you need to fix. I have awakened you to the idea of the looping effect and the layering effect and how damaging the both of them are. I've awakened you to the idea that you deserve to heal if it's the right thing. If it's right for you, you deserve to heal this primary pain that's pushing you. It is absolutely achievable if it's right for you. And if I can, look, I'll probably say on this day, 90, this is going to be this is God's work. This is my life's work. So you'll probably hear me saying this hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. But tonight was the first night that we said it. So I said it so wildly. Normally it's kept within the confines of our training. And because of the book as well, I wanted to kind of just try and start to have the conversation more openly rather than just to the therapist that I train. Anybody, any questions? I'm going to finish because you're all exhausted and probably fed up listening to me now at this stage. Anybody, any questions? Everybody happy enough for that? Everybody clear enough about the concepts? Yes, the podcast. Thank you, Caroline, for reminding me about that. The podcast is tomorrow. It's been launched tomorrow, and it is about this very topic. It's a personal story. Are you there, Miss Donna? Can I see you? There she is. It's myself and Donna, and we are talking about primary and secondary pain, and Donna gives a brilliant example of primary and secondary pain from her own perspective, and it's a really riveting story, and a real transformational story. It's really beautiful. We'll have it tomorrow. It'll be available to listen and available to watch, and you can watch. There's a whole podcast series coming, so, and Donna's on that tomorrow. So I'm delighted. The book's not available yet, and it'll be available to be next year. Sharon, so thanks for that question. And in terms of the clearing training, I can see a few. Yes, you get an email actually tomorrow morning. You get an email tomorrow morning. The podcast is called Healing at Last. So it's the title of the book. So Healing at Last. And it's on Spotify as well, Sharon. Yep. So available on all of them, but the link will be there. So at the moment, we are starting our clearing training. The clearing training starts on the, I know some of you are signed up. So I'm talking to some of you that are looking at me. Isn't that right, Tracy Lewis? So the clearing training starts on the 31st. We have some room, not very much, one or two places left. If anybody is interested, let us know. And if anybody is on the fence still, then we have a few days to make up your mind because we're closing it on Friday. So I will, anybody has any questions whatsoever, then send me a wee message about this. And if there's anything, the other thing to say is that, look, we have a team of therapists that are coming your way. They're about 3 weeks away from graduating. They have been trained in this over the last year. They also have their own modalities and they are coming your way. And I am hoping to be able to, because at the minute, you all know that I am topped out. I have no more capacity for, I have no capacity for any one-to-one work. And the therapists that we've already trained are a capacity from a clearing specialist point of view. But it is really important to say that we're going to have 10 specialists hitting the ground running by the end of January. So if any of this resonated for you and that you want, you're hoping to work with the clearing modality, then give us a shout. One of them actually does work in Letterkenny, Carmel. So if you're interested in the clearing modality and who's trained, in Donegal, yes, Sharon. We'll have people all over the world in about 4 weeks' time. But they are particularly trained on this type of seeing past secondary pain, working in primary pain. And what's lovely is that and I'll not mention your name. I know one person here has seen one of those therapists. And what was beautiful is we were having a conversation during the week that brought tears to the both of our eyes, because the effect when you train somebody. And you give over your life's work, which is what you're doing when you're training all our therapists. You're giving over all this information, you're giving your life's work. And you see the effect that those therapists are having on other people. And you know that the same thing is happening through the therapists you've trained, that they're doing the same work. It's the most amazing, amazing feeling in the world. So those therapists, there's some of them up and running and the rest of them will be coming very, very soon. If any of this struck a chord and you want to work with somebody who understands this stuff, then they'll be coming over in the next few weeks. Thank you, Joanne. Grateful for you as well. Thank you. Yeah, on a mission. So thanks for your time and your energy this evening. Start having conversations with your colleagues, start having conversations with your friends about primary and secondary pain. Let's make it a really normal thing to talk about. Let's, like we talk about mindfulness, let's just make it really normal and say, yeah, well, wonder is that primary or secondary pain? Imagine normalizing that conversation. Hi, Caroline, if you know everything goes through Leona, nothing comes through me. If anything comes through me, nothing will get done. Everything goes through Leona. Okay. Good night to everybody on Facebook. I'm going to hover a wee bit. I'm going to switch down Facebook. Anybody wants to ask me any questions about the secondary or primary pain, hover in Zoom. And if you want to stay around for 15 minutes, we'll do a wee Q&A. And for all of those on Facebook, I hope that this was helpful to you. And good night. And hopefully the replay will be up soon for you. All right. I'm just going to shut down Facebook. I hope I don't switch yous off. Let's see. If it all goes black, you'll know Siobhan. Siobhan Campbell's laughing. If it all goes black, I'm just going home. They have a bath. I'm going up. They have a bath. We're going to forget about the Q&A. So let's see. Let's see if it's all going to go black or if you're going to stay with me. 1, 2, 3. No, nobody went anyway. So we're all right here. Hold on, just do we see. Just do we see the Facebook never got. Do we see? Leona, are we finished?
I'm laughing. We're okay. Facebook's done. And you're still here, so all good.
Grand. You wouldn't know what I would be pressing. Oh, sweet Lord, gonna lose. No, I'm all right.
No, you're okay.
Great, thanks, Leona. Leona, head you on. I'll wrap up from here. Go on.
You've right, had enough. No worries. Okay. Well,
thanks.
I'm sure they know my email anyway and they can get
no bother, Leona. I'll shut this down. I think I'm capable of shutting a Zoom call down.
Thank you, Ari. More than. Good night, everybody.
All right. Night, night, Leona. See you tomorrow. See you tomorrow.
Bye. Bye.
Bye bye. Leona, get a lion, by the way, too.
Lovely.
I'm going to get my hair done, so I'll not be talking to you before until after then.
Brilliant, great.
I know. All right, thanks a million, darling. Get a lie on. All right. Okay. So, anybody, any questions? Anybody? Let's see the chat. Good. Okay. Anybody, any questions on that? How did you, Michael? How did you find that from your perspective?
Yeah, it was great, Shauna. I really, through a LinkedIn, a lot of this work we've done, a lot of different things.
Yeah.
But I actually had something happen during the week that just played on the money with us.
Brilliant.
The last bit of work we've been doing about my problem with dealing with difficult situations because of the core wound from the past. And was really on top of it and was going great. And I was saying I was working on that I can cope with difficult situations. Yeah. They're not a problem. And then I just slipped into secondary pain. And I understand. I know we worked on that, but this explains it perfect.
Right.
And we've been off work now for 2 weeks for Christmas and we're going back. And I started thinking, how am I going to cope with that? That's going to be difficult. Right. And maybe we should set a route up where we're not working together. Right. And I'm looking at the house. I was telling you about, we've just moved house and everything's all over the place.
Okay.
And I'm starting looking at that and I'm thinking, right, this needs to be tidied up and this has to be done, that has to be done. And I'm saying to myself, I actually said to my wife, this isn't a core wound from back then. This is problems now. This is just our thing now. I have myself convinced.
Right? Brilliant.
It took me a whole day to start working back through it. And
doing the proper work.
And doing the proper work. And then I suddenly realized, and then I seen that wee bit, that stuff you sent me, was right in the middle of what this was. Brilliant. And I'm reading through this and I'm going, of course, that's you're back in the secondary pain.
Michael, you're actively working on that at the moment.
Yeah.
But how amazing is it that you're in awareness of the primary pain? You're actively working on it. We are actively working on it. It's a piece of the puzzle that you're actively working on. But yet it's still tricky.
Yeah.
Because that's the functions of the mind.
Yeah.
It's still tricky and be trying to find a solution externally there.
Yeah, it was like, I get this all tidied up and I get that moved through and I get that cupboard sorted, then this will be okay. And completely, for a whole day, completely back in the secondary pain again and trying to solve everything with that until I read that wee stuff you sent me was all about that. And I read through it and I went, hold on.
And you're back and defining the piece of the puzzle that you need to fix.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm back working on the primary pain again, knowing that that's where the issues are.
So they're saying, well done, Michael. So see if I take you back, right? Because you don't mind me putting you in the spot.
So
some of the other wounded stuff that we would have worked on.
Mm.
That doesn't create, because it's not active, because it's deactivated. You don't get that.
Yeah, well, as we're saying about like what we're working on, to me, this is my final piece.
Yeah.
All the other stuff has been dealt with. All that secondary pain that I was playing around with for 50 years has now been sorted. And I can see that when it comes up, that's not what's going on. Like I can, you know, I can now see that where the issues are.
Yeah.
You know, and like this, the anybody there, this process is just absolutely mind-blowing. You know, Shauna, you have changed my life in the past 2 years. And I never give people to thank you enough for that. No. But it's just, it's crazy how this works, that you go back there and you find the core wound back whenever it was, and you see how you misinterpreted that whole situation, how you and how you develop these beliefs about yourself and about the world, and how you live with them for years. But it's when you go back to that point and you explain yourself back then, that's not true.
Yeah.
The truth is,
many of those and many, because that sounds quite simple. Like Michael makes it sound like it's a walk in the park. I really appreciate that.
It's not a walk in the park.
I really do appreciate that, but you make it sound like you just walk back and you have a wee word. But
no, the
tug and the pull and the intricacies. And no, I just like to keep it real, because I think there's enough stuff out there that talks about, you know, fast access to stuff.
Yeah, no, I know that. No, it's a lot of work, a lot of difficult work.
A lot of difficult work. You know, I'm not a great salesperson. I'm not a great marketing person. I'm not making this look good. Michael's just made it look perfectly easy, and I'm just down taking away all his good hard work.
No, it is where I am now. It's easy now looking back at it.
Yes.
It wasn't easy a year ago or 18 months ago, you know.
No, when we were knee deep. And a lot of, if you don't mind me saying, Michael, you played a huge active part in AWARE and done an awful lot of work with them, and because that was the secondary pain, wasn't it, for you? You were
That's all that was.
And I
can see now that you're just pedaling water, you're just going around in circles, you know. And as you say, that you know, there's people, I know people who are still in that and can't seem to move beyond that. Like you were saying, there's people who maybe it's too difficult to get to, but I just got to the point where I just had to get this sorted. I couldn't live with it any longer, you know.
Yeah. And we moved offices from, I was in Central in Derry. I don't know where everybody is, but I was in Derry and we moved offices, and I've just built new offices out here. And Michael wrote a load of poems, because he's an artist and a poet. And he wrote a load of poems as he journeyed and gave me the poems. And as he was journeying through his own material, and I have one of the poems up in the office called The Journey. So I might share it with you all. Might put it in the page, because it speaks about exactly about what you're talking about, is the road within, the journey within, the stop pedaling water, the moving within, the pain within, and working with that. Thank you, Michael. Yeah. Thanks so much.
All right. I didn't talk too long.
No, you did not talk too long. I put you in the spot, so I hope I didn't put you.
I'm only too happy to help, Sean. Anything you can do to help,
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Michael. Is anybody else any questions there about any of that? How was that? Well, I'll put it up. I'll send it to you, actually. It's a beautiful poem. It really is a beautiful, beautiful poem.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael, as well, for sharing. It's so nice to hear an individual story, and it's so real. So thank you. So I was just thinking, I understand the bit about a core wound and how an event can happen somebody, and it's not just the event, it's also how that is managed within the sense that is formed from that. But I was thinking, and having read material, it's like misattunement with yourself, with your essence.
Yes.
And then, so this, I don't know if anybody is interested, but as such, like being left singing out of key, or playing a piano out of key. So you can get along.
Yes.
But it's just, you're not true to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful way to say it, Siobhan. You're out of tune with your real self. You can get along. Some people can get along. Some people can't. Some people are so badly wounded that they'll never play again. And that's the reality of the stuff, you know, that's just the reality of it. But it's a beautiful analogy, absolutely beautiful. For most of us, luckily, that we do get along and we just play out of tune.
Yeah.
Which is so sore.
Yeah. Yeah. So just on a practical level, working with somebody at the moment, and there was a traumatic incident, and even we've done work on broken relationship, on bereavement, on grief. And so we've come so far, but their sense of the world, and we've worked with core beliefs. So, you know, from when they were young up to the point of this trauma, just after that trauma, and now, you know, to see the changes. But we know that although there was improvement, we're stuck because touching it is so raw. And actually, on a practical level, there's an issue physically with the person with their blood pressure and they're having these very high blood pressure, low. They're dreaming, you know, nightmares, and as they said today, bubbling. It's bubbling there because bubbling. It's come up through our work, I would say.
Yeah.
But a little bit of me was, I suppose, wary because ensuring safety. And
yeah, you've done emotional mastery, Siobhan, haven't you?
Not really. No. No.
Right. It sounds like an emotional mastery issue to me. It sounds like there is a safety issue there. It sounds like there's a capacity issue that they can be in and around it and see it and look at it and be objective. That.
Yeah, just.
Just. Mm-hmm. But to be in it, which is where the transformation is, to be actually in it.
Yeah.
It's too big. So it sounds to me like it's an emotional mastery issue. It sounds to me like there's a capacity issue in the system that won't allow, can't tolerate. Yeah. And that's a wrapping issue. And it's also a co-regulation issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the prep work. Yeah. The beautiful question, because that's the prep work. So you would not be dragging anybody into the heart of that issue. As you beautifully say, and you can see where it's affecting them physically. That's one of those wee protein spikes I was saying. The actual way that the body responds in the emotion. So there's a wee bit of prep work that will be required. And it's not grounding techniques, or this is different.
Yeah.
It's an unwrapping piece, and it's and I know that doesn't make any sense technically to you, but what you could start with, which is easily obtained without NMI training, is you could start with how they co-regulate themselves. You need unwrapping for it to be safe, but it's a great start.
And you know, I'm not sure if I'm the right person at this point in time, but they're aware of that, and I've shared that. And we know, you know, so we're taking it very
nice and slowly. Knowing you, Siobhan, I know that you won't push, and I know that safety will be your priority. Yeah. And in that, the two of you will find your way.
Well, it's very, very powerful, isn't it? The fact that they're attending their GP with blood pressure. And I truly believe it's because of our work.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah. And then that becomes the problem that's treated.
Yeah.
And that becomes a secondary problem. That's, you know, so you can have all sorts of secondary problems that are treated physically, like through the doctors. I've dealt with lots of people who have had very deep somatic pain from opening the wounds of the past. Yeah.
Like visceral pain.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
There's no rhyme or reason.
I know that because I feel that sometimes myself.
Yes.
I don't mind sharing.
It's the most incredible process Thank you. Thanks so much. Thank you. Thank you. There's a thing, might end with this. There's a thing, I was talking to the clearing guys last night about, and there's a thing that I have, just in the back of what you said, Siobhan, when you work in primary pain and you see the puppeteering of the self through primary pain, you see how you're puppeteered, you see the choices that you made, there's often a grief process when you're healing out, when you're clearing out that primary pain, because you can see your why, you can see what happened, you can see, you know, there's often a long time that you've held this primary pain, and you're out of tune, as you said, with your essence, and you look back at this out of tune, and it can be very kind of grief stricken, because you realize that you've been out of tune for a long, long time, and all that was lost and all it could have been. And so the journey back to yourself through the clearing of primary pain, sometimes at the end, isn't this glorious kind of riding through the beach on a white horse moments where you find yourself again. Sometimes it can be layered with melancholy, layered with the pain of the choices that were made in the primary pain. You know, so that's a real part of what I will call coming home to yourself. It's a real additional part. I think sometimes when we talk about healing, we wrap it up in clouds of bubbly wonderfulness. And I just try to like keeping it as real as we can, because we keep it really real. People will not misplace the experience. There's something wrong with them. So on that journey home can be heartbreaking. You know, we talked about that. Of Donna Thompson still here. We talked about that last night in training. It was very, very powerful. It's actually what our next podcast is about. So to know that is a really important piece of the puzzle. All right. Anybody else? Any burning questions before we go? Yes, it's while important to manage the reality of the process, to manage the act, to be in the realness of it. You know?
Sean, I haven't got a question. It's just a comment. I've been listening to you on and off now for a couple of years. It's Sharon Johnson.
Sharon, where are you? I see your wee face. Hold on a wee minute.
I'll wave at you there now.
Wave. There you go, Sharon.
And I did the emotional mastery with you. And all I can say is you talk so much sense. It's so simple, but it's so profound. And I can't tell you how much you've changed my life in the last couple of years. And
really?
I really do think, because I did the emotional mastery. So I'm doing the emotional mastery course. I got in touch with my cousin who lives over there with yourselves over in Ireland. And we got chatting, and we chatted about our experiences growing up. And I think it just helped us both. And I cannot tell you. And I just sit here with listening to what you've talked about tonight, about the primary and the secondary. And I just think, wow, the pieces of jigsaw and the lights have just gone ping, ping, ping.
Good.
And I just think, wow, it's just, I cannot tell you. And I don't know whether it's just, and please forgive me, it's the Irishness, because my father is from Fermanagh, and I relate so much. I cannot thank you.
I'm delighted, Sharon. Thank you. That's so gorgeous. And it used to be hard for me to accept that type of praise, but I'll take it and I'll keep it, and it'll fuel me for all the evangelical preaching that I do. So thank
you.
Well,
next time we're over, I might drop over to Derry and see you.
Wouldn't that be lovely? Wouldn't that be gorgeous? You can buy the coffee. That'd be nice. That'd be gorgeous. Thank you. Thanks so much, Sharon. It's really, really lovely to see that it makes a difference, because as you all know, this is what I came to understand through my own inner process. And then to see that this inner process is so universal is is where I understood then that this isn't just something that I came to understand through this witness consciousness. It's actually available to every single human being, and it's so universal. So when I start talking about it through both my experience and the clinical practice and the clinical understanding, and then to have it fed back that it works, is just lovely, because we're only new. I'm only new in terms of spreading the word. So it's lovely to hear it back. Thank you. Thank you. I'll keep going. Awesome. Thank you. Lots of clarity. Good. Okay. All right, my loves. It's 9 o'clock. He's had enough of me. Come on, an hour and a half. He's be glad to get rid of me. Thanks, Colin. Thanks, Siobhan. Thanks, Max. Thanks, Sharon. I saw you, Sarah, Caroline, Lorraine. I saw your lovely wee faces as I was talking. I like to keep a wee cohort. So I had, for the whole way through that, I had Colin and Sharon and Siobhan and Mags looking at me with her wee smiling nodding faces, which is just so lovely, so gorgeous to see the feedback coming back, and it's nice and helpful, and it helps me deliver what's inside me without notes, which is a whole other thing in itself. Thanks so much, everybody. These are brilliant, great. We're going to do loads more of these, loads more of these, going into the main page over the coming weeks. And just take care of yourself and enjoy the podcast tomorrow. Enjoy. Take care, everybody. All right. Much love. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks a million. Thanks, David. Bye-bye. It's good to see your wee face as well.
Thanks, Shauna.
Good to see. Brida, see you soon.
Yeah.
You excited?
Yeah.
I'm so excited. See you soon. All right. Bye.